You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is the 26th of May 2017. It's a beautiful, glorious summer's evening. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and of course I'm joined by the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today on this glorious, glorious evening?
Doing fine, and it certainly is a glorious evening for a change. I'm going to make the most of it after this podcast, no doubt.
Yeah, I was going to say we have to stay indoors. Look at these trials and tribulations we go through to produce some alt-right radio for you at home. Yeah, well, I think you've outdone yourself, Dennis. I've been lucky enough today to see part two of the documentary series, the preview version. And you cover lots of stuff in it. And it really was like watching The Greatest Story Never Told again. It was like being back there. Very, very reminiscent of that. But all different information that all these different strands that you can see that you're starting to pull together. The music is really, really uplifting in places. And it really fits with the scenes that you've got, the voiceover with it. Just really, really impressed. I'm sure people are going to love it when it finally comes out. And of course, I picked out a few bits and pieces from it that I thought we could discuss. And the first one that I've got here is it goes into a bit of detail on the Soviet rebellion in Munich, the first Soviet Republic in 1919. And the two that were Rosa Luxemburg is one of them. And I didn't write down the name of the other one, Karl Liebknecht. Was this other one?
Liebknecht, yeah.
Liebknecht. They were the two ringleaders, weren't they?
Yeah, these were the two which were the standout. I actually mentioned them, believe it or not, in, I don't know if you remember that piece in Greatest Story Never Told, when Adolf Hitler's just coming back home and he's in his uniform and he's looking up at some people pulling down a flag, a red flag, and they actually get mentioned in that little piece there, and that's the only time I mention them. But they were quite prominent, and it's a piece of history which ourselves aren't really aware of, and I suppose they don't really hammer it over in Germany these days. So it's interesting for me as well, if you like, you know.
Well, they try to cover it up that these guys were terrorists, weren't they? They took over Munich and tried to turn it into a Soviet Republic right after the Bolshevik Revolution. It was the equivalent of a foreign power trying to take over the country, and these two were tried. Were they tried as traitors? Is that why they were executed, or were they tried as murderers? Do you know what the actual trial was about?
To be honest, I don't think they were tried. I think the situation was in them days, the Germans knew about the Bolsheviks. Even the guy who again appears in the Adolf Hitler Greatest Story video talks about it and says that. You know, people finally realized there was no difference between Bolshevism and Judaism. And so consequently, with this dawning on these German patriots, what they did, they arrested them and consequently, I believe, interrogated, which is probably another word for torture, and then took them out back and shot them.
Well, the reason why I was asking is that, I mean, they were obviously traitors. That's why they tried to come up with this uprising. That's why they were executed. But they've actually named streets after them. They've named places after them in Germany.
Yeah, well, this gives me more ammunition again. When I say today to people that we're living under a communist system and people doubt it, you know, why on earth would you have memorials to these communist terrorists? But at the end of the day, you've got to remember the time lapse we're in, where they've just come back from World War One. There isn't much, you know, a feeling of what shall we say? You know, sit down, let's talk about it. It was just a question like, you know, take them right back and shoot them, because they are what they are. And the Germans were getting really, really wise to it all. And of course, at that, you know yourself, with your commentary on the communism in Germany, the boot which was banned for quite some time, and you would have known yourself that the problems the National Socialists had with the communists and the terror that was going on before they managed to get to power.
Well, yeah, this was no peaceful protest. This wasn't people marching about holding placards. This was a group of armed terrorists with weapons stashes all over the country, plotting to blow up train stations, railways, take over factories. And they succeeded in taking over Munich. How long did they actually have power in Munich for, do you know?
Well, they actually took complete power for about just under a week. It's that old saying, isn't it? Chaos, order from chaos. They were out to cause as much chaos as possible and then emerge victorious like the Bolsheviks did.
And of course, once they took power, or they were hoping to take power, they would have just opened up the borders and brought the Red Army in. That was the plan, according to the Communism in Germany book. And they had all the evidence for it, the records of what they'd been communicating between one another. And it was just pure treason against the country. And yet today they've got all these streets named after them. Leibnizplatz or Goldbergplatz, or these places named after them.
Well, there's one or two others as well, which I didn't bother putting in. But yeah, there's like some monuments as well, especially to where there's quite a number from her. There's a foundation, a Luxembourg foundation. And there's an unfinished cornerstone as well for the other guy. So, you know, these people aren't particularly frowned on. In fact, you know, you get a memorial. If I had a street named after me, it'd be something quite impressive.
Well, you know, it just goes to show, doesn't it? It proves the point that the people that were behind the Soviet Union are behind the European Union. And the people that Hitler was fighting against, it took over Germany. The Berlin Wall may have fallen, but the Soviet ideology is still there. And the idolization, the worshipping of these Jewish terrorists is still going on. And the people in Germany are being forced to use their names any time they want to write to somebody who lives in that area. I mean, that's a great honor, isn't it?
Never forgotten, yeah.
Great honor to give someone.
I mean, there was a memorial after the death, but on the National Socialists coming to power, they soon put an end to that one. But as you can see from the documentary, they have got these other memorials as well, you know.
And then it moves on after that, and we look at what happened in Poland, because of course what we mainly have concentrated on in the past or often talk about is what happened with Danzig and how the Germans had to go into Poland to rescue these other Germans. But we don't hear very much about what happened when the Russians moved into the other part of Poland.
Exactly. And of course, we never will do. I mean, again, I mentioned the atrocities which they're about to inflict on what is a devout Roman Catholic country. And these were mentioned, if you can remember, in Communism by the Back Door, in the letter to the clergy in the BBC, saying that we know what's going to be coming to Europe because we know what they did in Poland in 1920. This is, you know, this British, they're going to make up this propaganda over the Germans in World War II. So they're kind of referencing or sourcing the fact that they know, so that I can vouch that there was atrocities in Poland in this 1920 invasion.
So this was a 1920 invasion of Poland, once the war had started, and then Stalin moved in and took over Poland later on.
No, this is a different one. This is the World Revolution. You know, this is the great Jewish World Revolution, which we'll probably come to this shortly about the protocols. It's all designed in the protocols. And this is, as soon as they took control of the Soviet Union themselves, when they had the civil war with the White Army, the White Russian Army, and defeated them, they immediately just looked forward, you know, to where can we go next? And obviously Poland being on the border, and obviously being the gateway to Europe and being a Roman Catholic country was like, you know, too good to resist.
Yeah, and there's a really good shot that you've got where they're throwing the flag of Poland, hurling it like a spear, as if to say, now we do away with the flag and we hurl it into the ground. And this is really true. When the Soviets took over these countries, they banned this using of the flag. Anyone that had a flag would be sent to Siberia. People would have to hide these things. It was like contraband, like drugs are today. People would have to hide their country's flag. And they had so much respect for it. So much love for their flag. They were banned from singing their national songs, banned from having any any national identity whatsoever. This is why the Baltic countries place so much importance on their flag, but particularly Latvia. And once the Iron Curtain was finally lifted and they were allowed to wave their flags again, and you go to Riga, the place is just full of the Latvian flag. It's really important to them. And you can understand that when you realize that school teachers would be sent away to Siberia if they were caught with a miniature flag in their school desk. And people would have to hide these things like contraband. So the image that you showed there where they were hurling the flag like a spear into the ground, I thought that was really well made. Well, whoever the filmmaker was that shot
what he was
that,
doing, yeah.
Yeah, he really put some thought into it.
But doesn't that take you back to the recent banning of the Confederate flag in America?
Well, yeah. That's another parallel, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Why they're trying to ban that
now. The same people.
Yeah, so same people, same ideology. They won't.
Different generation, yeah.
Yeah, and you've also got more of a racial aspect to it now. They're trying to use the blacks to say that's why we need to get rid of the Confederate flag because it's offensive to blacks. But they just think up any excuse.
Divide and conquer.
Yeah, any excuse to get rid of patriotism and nationalism. Of course, it's all outlined.
Black and the white race.
Yeah.
Excuse the pun.
All outlined in the Protocols of Zion, which is the next bit that you get to, and you tell the story how that came.
Yeah, so can I just mention this little piece before we move on to that? There's a part when there's a guy talking whose father was the head of one of the leaders of this revolution, and he actually says that when his father died heroically and shouted before he was shot, along with the world revolution. Well, we know what that is now. It's this aimed for a Jewish utopia.
Well, yeah, just to go back to that as well, then they show the balancing part as well, don't they? A relative of the Germans that was shooting these Bolsheviks. And you're saying, well, you know, I felt no conscience about it. These guys were bad dudes. We had to put them down. You know, they were going to destroy the country. He knew
that
what
the
was
problem.
Going on.
Because they'll always come back, and they always have come back in throughout history, like with the Soviet Union. If that wasn't the first attempt to turn over the Tsar, they had several attempts. You know, they will always come back, and that is a problem, because when it gets to that point, then when you've got them prisoner, what do? If you let them go, they're going to be back.
Well, this was the problem, wasn't it? It was a fake revolution, and the Tsar abdicated, and then he sort of willingly went to under house arrest, and of course then they just offed him once they had him in their power. That's what they do. That's what Cromwell did. That's what happened in the French Revolution. You cover some of the French Revolution in this as well, with Louis the 16th when they beheaded him. It's all about killing the royals. Just before we went on air, we were just having a discussion about this and saying, who is it we can turn to? If you were to say to somebody, well, our government have taken us over, the bankers are oppressing us, and they were from the past, they would say, well, what's your king doing about it? What's your king doing? Because our king is supposed to be there to protect us. And what have we done? We've killed the king. We killed him in France, killed him in Russia, killed him in Britain. We killed off all our royalty, the people that are supposed to be there to protect us and provide for us and stand up for us. And we killed them. And we're told this is a good thing today. This is really good because it brought us democracy.
Yeah. Well, it did. But, you know, people don't really understand the truth to democracy.
Oh, yeah. So many people are anti-royalty, anti-monarchy. But that's because they just see somebody with lots of money today who does nothing.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I used to think like that myself, I've got to be honest.
It's very easy. It's very easy to think that if you don't know much about the tradition of the monarchy and how it started and how we had it for thousands of years and how it all got overturned by these bankers, really. And just if we go back to the protocols here, I mean, you then explained how the Protocols of Zion got brought back to Britain, but they talk about that, don't they? Getting rid of the king, getting rid of the monarchy.
Well, it's all in there. I thought, you know, I mean, I'll probably come back to them again in the series because they are important, because no matter what the Jewish organizations have said since, saying that, you know, they're fake or they're hoax. 95% of the protocols have actually come to fruition. So, you know, they do have a big bearing on the world today and where the world could possibly end up. And yeah, I explain how they were discovered and brought back and who brought them back. And yeah, again, it's interesting for me to find out. I mean, at one stage, like I actually, Mrs. Webster, who Churchill, mentions in that opening speech for his article in the paper. She crops up again, talking about, the Rothschilds and the Illuminati. And then I just remind everybody that Churchill mentioned this woman and praised her in that opening part.
Yeah, Nesta Webster wrote some really good books exposing the conspiracy, and she basically exposed all these secret societies and how they were working for a world revolution. But she didn't quite place the fact that the Jews were behind this. She was rather enamored of the Jews. But the connections between the Freemasons and the secret societies, she got all of that spot on. And you can tell from a lot of her work that these protocols, they weren't fake, because these secret societies were talking about them. And William Fink's doing a series at the moment on the Protocols of Zion. And in the introduction to that, he shows that all of these protocols were being discussed by these secret societies. They were trying to carry this out. So to say that the Protocols of Zion are a fake or a forgery, they may not have been the literal minutes of a meeting, but that is exactly what these secret societies were planning on carrying out and have continued to carry out right to this very day. The idea that they're a forgery is just, you know, it's just not true.
No, I totally agree. And obviously, there's, people are still reading them today in awe of how they've come about and gone about exactly what they planned.
Yeah, I remember the first time I read them and just being amazed and thinking, I wish I'd read these years ago, because it really does explain everything that we see around us, why it's happening. And you, as you read it, you can think of specific examples of what you're reading and how it applies. And it's even got Darwin in there that we talked about a while back. But this guy, Victor Marsden, he was the one that supposedly brought them back from Russia. Can you tell us some more about him?
Yeah, apparently he was a correspondent for a London newspaper and covering, obviously, the revolution in Russia, and obviously must have said the wrong thing at the wrong time and ended up in prison. But eventually he was freed and returned, even though he was a physical wreck. And meanwhile, he'd managed to get a copy of these documents, which had first been raised in Russia about 1905. So in 1920, 1919, he's come back to London with them and decided to translate them and then publish them. And then obviously at some stage he gets a death threat, saying not to publish, ignores that, publishes them in 1920, and then he actually does die in 1920. So whether two and two make four, you're going to make your own mind up there. But yeah, significantly from then on, they caused controversy all around the world, because suddenly people, even at that stage, would have been looking at them and thinking, whoa, you know, this has already happened, and this has already happened, you know.
Oh, he's basically collecting together all the bits and pieces that people had suspicions about from these secret societies and putting them all together into one document, because it wasn't just going on then in 1905. I mean, this goes way back to, well, as you show in the documentary, Dennis, it goes back to Adam Weishaupt and before him even. And he had these plans for that, didn't he?
Well, the thing is that, you know, there's been this cover-up of even of the Illuminati. A lot of people today, they hear the word Illuminati and they think a conspiracy or a fairy tale or, you know, it's not really true. But actually, it's quite true. I mean, and one of the ways that we did actually find out about it was an act of God, where one of the riders, I think it was possibly even 20 years, you know, before the French Revolution, was hit by lightning. Anonymous had these papers, and the police, Bavarian police, raided his place where he lived and found more documents. And they would have had no idea of this fraternity existing. I mean, you know, there was plans to take over France in these documents then. Consequently, you know, they have to go underground, but arose again a number of years later, and lo and behold, the French Revolution did take place.
So it was just an act of providence that they actually found this out. But I think those documents show that this is a plan that had been going on for a long time, this plan for world revolution. And even though they did find these documents and the Illuminati had to go underground, they obviously still continued. One part that I didn't know that Adam Weishaupt started the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. I thought that was Aleister Crowley that started that.
Well, I have to smile when I heard it was Rothschild's, Purcell Coven, which wasn't good enough for Aleister Crowley. That guy was two foot ahead in his debauchery to settle for the Golden Dawn.
So this was Rothschild's personal coven, was a hermetic order of the Golden Dawn.
Yeah.
Well, that just proves this Rothschild link with the Luciferian secret societies, doesn't it? If he was one of the founding members of this original group, because it's from that all the other ones have really sprung from, isn't it? The Ordo Templi Orientis, right. And all
Hellfire
the rest of them.
Club. I'd love to go and see them, actually. I might make the effort one day, because that in itself must be an experience to go to the place where all this black magic and things all took place. And I believe you can visit it.
What's that then? What's the Hellfire
Club? The Hellfire Club. It was a club which the elite of the day, and even Franklin used to come back from America to visit, with just pure debauchery. Where women would go in there and probably never see the light of day again. They get fooled into going down there for a good time. There's a video on it on YouTube somewhere I watched, where they're actually going around and a guide is taking everybody around in this dark, depressing cave come cells, and they're talking about what went on there, you know, and the black magic.
Ah, because I was thinking the Hellfire Club was more like a club, a secret society, a group of people. I didn't realize it was an actual place.
So
I
knew for the High Society.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I know Aldous Huxley was involved in it with the Hellfire.
Right. Well, I'll send you a link to the video. It's quite amazing.
Oh, well, all these things spring on from that. They all go back to the Kabbalah. Hermeticism is the Kabbalah, and this Neoplatonism. Professor E. Michael Jones has been talking a lot about this recently, and how it how it links in with usury and the banking system, and even with our conception of science goes back to this, and all around about that time and these secret societies. And it's all just taught in schools now, science. We just take it all for granted that's the way things are, but it's actually based on these occult ideas.
Well, I think I mentioned in Coming by the Back Door at some point, there's one the pupil in Britain, the lower, or should I say the middle of working class pupils, are taught one thing, but the elites in the schools are taught all about this kind of, you know, the Camerons and, you know, Boris Johnsons all know about this. I mean, they're in their own little clubs themselves, the Bulletin Club or whatever. You know, it's a world which is kept away from the populace, if you like. And so consequently, when you mention this type of thing, obviously people jump on your back saying conspiracy theory. But actually, you know, these people are well aware of it. And, you know, obviously they're being schooled to go into a life of a politician. And Oxford University is another source of Rothschild's education system, if you like.
I really don't doubt it. It's got to be pretty obvious that they're going to be taught different things to what we are taught in the schools that we go to. They're going to be taught all how to manipulate people and Machiavellian ideas and different way and ways to deal with huge, great groups of people rather than dealing on an individual to an individual basis. They're not going to be taught They're not going to ever have to learn how to scrimp and save to get by, are they? They're going to be thinking about all these other things, no. these ways to manipulate people. And if you think this group have been either in power or they've been involved in the levers of power for thousands of years, haven't they? The king's Jews.
I think there's a bloodline to it. I mean, there's the 13 families of the Illuminati, Kennedy's being one, Collins being another. You know, Michael Collins in Ireland, I don't know whether you saw the film or not, about the IRA, Collins was one of them from that family, and which consequently a lot, you know, emigrated to America with the, you know, the Pilgrim Fathers. You know, there was a lot of the witchcraft. What's going on wasn't going down too well in this country until they moved out and went to America to start afresh in a new Atlantis type of thing. So all this comes to play, but it's all treated as a conspiracy because it's so hidden and twisted. I mean, with Hitler, you know, you've got so many people saying, oh, he's into the occult, or he had Blavatsky's book every night and all this kind of thing, just to twist and turn and keep people away from the real truth. And all I've done is gone off exactly what I was told about Adolf Hitler right from the start. Never moved off that, no matter what were thrown at me, to get me to the point where, you know, 100% believe that Adolf Hitler was the, if not one of the greatest men of all time.
One of the great, greatest Christian men. Definitely, as well. Yeah, I mean, we can add that to it. I mean, when I was watching the parts about the Illuminati, and he was talking about enlightenment and illumination, and I was thinking, well, the Black Sun that the National Socialists used, that was the opposite of all that, isn't it? That's the opposite of the material light that you can see. That is symbolizing a light that you can't see, which is Christ in the Bible. Christ is the light that no man can see, no man can approach unto. The holy city is lit by this light, which doesn't come from the sun. It's not like our sun that we see. It's a light that we can't comprehend in the fallen state that we're actually in. But that to me seems to be what the Black Sun is symbolizing. It's a light.
Well, they've twisted that because somebody mentioned to me, like, what's this about the Black Sun and the occult and all this? And literally there's a dozen, videos on YouTube proclaiming this Black Sun to be evil, you know.
Well, they look at it as if it's an eclipse, as if it's blotting out the light, as if the light's a good thing and that's blotting it out. That's not what the symbol is at all. I mean, if you think of the sun, that gives us heat, it makes the plants grow. But if you have a dead body, that sun can't bring it back to life. It isn't the material sun that actually gives us life. Our life comes from something else. Our life comes from a spiritual sun, which is the opposite of the material sun, which is what the Black Sun is. It's a symbol for God, and the material sun is a symbol of the imposter of that. Everything that we see around us, all the material world, is a reflection of the truthful spiritual world, which is symbolized by the Black Sun. It's not black as in evil, dark, or wicked.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like a swastika as well. I mean, you know, I've got pictures of a swastika, a Boy Scout medal, as a good luck charm. And there's a motorcycle club also with a swastika with good luck written underneath. I mean, this is a charm which they've taken away from us. It's now banned and frowned on. Where really, it's definitely a good luck charm.
Well, the swastika has been used by Aryans for thousands of years, and we can still see in the countries which don't really have whites in them anymore, but that still have the swastika, that it's used for good luck. And in China, India, and it doesn't matter which way round it's turning. But if you look at that, I mean, everything turns, everything spins. It's as if everything spreads out from the centre. When you're very young, you're very small, and you're just discovering life, you learn about a few things. And as you get older, as you grow, you learn more, and your sphere of influence becomes bigger. And everything that that you have learned, you can manage to fit into your consciousness. But it keeps growing, it keeps expanding, and it keeps moving. I think the swastika is a symbol for that, but not on the individual level, but as the whole of creation. that spins mm-hmm. out from that center and keeps growing. And it seems to me to symbolize that. And we see it reflected in the universe above us. We see the plow as that moves around that central point. It makes the sign of the swastika. It's just movement to me. And also the four ways that we can look up, we can look down, we can look left, look right, the four arms of the compass, it's just the four directions and the constant moving and the four winds of the earth. It's a symbolism of life itself. And the, mm-hmm. the black sun is the symbol of the God that gives us life, that gives life to the world around us. That's what the two mm-hmm. symbols seem to me to be showing. I mean, that's the importance of a symbol. You don't have to put it into words. It's
that's right.
What you see from
it. That's right. Yeah, well, as we know from the Masons, they have enough symbols for them to be going on for a lifetime.
Well, I was just going to say, it's like the fascists. I was having a comment in conversation with somebody the other day, and I gave them my description of what fascism is. And she said, oh, no, it's not that. This is the dictionary definition, totalitarian state. And I was like, well, no, hang on. The fascism has been around for 2,000 years, and it hasn't changed. Yeah. It's a symbol. Yeah. It's a symbol of all for one and one for all, and everyone working together and becoming something greater than the individual once they're all together, bound by a common belief, a common ethnicity. Because the symbol itself doesn't change, does it?
Exactly.
That's the importance.
Yeah. But again, you know, a lot of that's been twisted as well, because after World War II, obviously, people don't realise that, you know, they were changing texts. We obviously saw the speech that Hitler gave and was mistranslated last week, which was in the first part. So all these things have gone on to fool and convince people, even educated people, who sometimes try and tell me about certain things, and it's just absolute nonsense. They've just swallowed the agenda.
This is why it's so important to look back in history, and this is the importance of symbols that we see reoccurring throughout history. And you can take the cross as well. We were using the cross before Christ, but the fact that Christ was crucified on one of our most important symbols is very important. The cross is a symbol of Christianity now, and yet it was a symbol of white people for thousands of years before that.
That's right. And funny enough, I've just, in my research, just come across a photo. I don't know a lot about, you may do, I don't know, but the Armenian massacre. I saw a photograph very, well, identical, really, to the Mexican Revolution, where it showed on a train line people being crucified, Catholics, being crucified all the way down the line. On this Armenian photograph, naked women, Christian women, crucified all the way down the line. Just as we see on Spartacus, the movie, when they're crucifying all the slaves, this has happened in at least two of these events that I know of. I'm not 100% sure about the Armenian one, but I suspect, obviously, if they're going to crucify naked Christian women, it's got to be the same bunch who's doing it in Mexico.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they have a same way of doing things, a ritual way of slaying people, slaughtering people. It probably goes all the way back to the temple when they were doing that there back in Jerusalem, when Titus and Vespasian ended up having to drive the Jews out of the city and destroy the temple. These Jews, these revolutionary Jews, they were slaughtering people, pulling out their entrails, massacring them, doing these horrific tortures to them. Mm-hmm. Exactly the same behavior as we see in the Bolshevik Revolution. Yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah. When I read the works of Flavius Josephus talking about Jerusalem and these revolutionary Jews that were in there, I just thought this could be reading about the Bolshevik Revolution today. It's exactly the same thing, even down to dressing up as women. Dressing up as women while they were doing it.
Well, the French Revolution, again, was, you know, a Jewish takeover of a Christian country, and list exactly, you know, what the end result was of that revolution. And it could quite easily be the Russian Revolution, because listed here, it's the Roman Catholic owned one third of the land in France, had it sold to the people for gold, sold off. 7,000 Roman Catholic priests were killed. What was that remind you of? The back of the Catholic Church was broken. The monarchy of France destroyed. Again, what does that remind you of? The Jews were emancipated in France and most of Europe, because obviously Napoleon is a Freemason and he's obviously fighting their cause, and he goes all around Europe freeing up these Jews from these ghettos, and he even wants to take Palestine at one point. So I'm pretty sure that they'd, you know, he wants that for a reason. You got much of France's intelligentsia was murdered. What does that remind you of? Katyn and the Soviet Union. And then, of course, with this victory, there were more secret societies set up around Europe, which, of course, when the fascists got in, Mussolini, Franco, Hitler, closed down.
Well, this reminds me of when they did away with the monasteries and in Britain, and they took all the money from the church and took all the lands from the church. Plundered, are you going to be going into that at all?
Yeah, but possibly. Yeah, I know. E. Michael Jones speaks about that just as a pure. It's a different Protestancy from from the European one. This was just a way of getting all the gold and stealing the land and stealing the churches. And if you go along, even today in England, if you go to what is a Church of England or a Protestant church, you'll notice somewhere on the board it will mention Catholic, because all the churches obviously were at one point were all Catholic.
Yeah, and they got rid of all the really ornate ones with all the history that went along with them, and a lot of the writings that they had, a lot of the history. I think Bishop Williamson talks about this as well. After the Protestant Revolution, when he did away with these monasteries, it was because he wanted the money because he was in debt, and it was also because he wanted a divorce. He wanted to marry someone else. It was a purely selfish thing, just to help this one guy out. He must have had Jewish advisors. That's all I can say.
Again, I watched a video on the Mall in London. You know, the city of London, where even the Queen has to ask permission to enter. And apparently, it's a real place of horror back in history and debauchery. I mean, and they've got their own police force down there. So if you're loitering around a building too long, a police car will turn up, and it won't be of a British police car. It'll be a City of London police car, and they will move you on. And Henry VIII, apparently, there's a place down there where, first of all, William Wallace was executed in that 1 mile area. And also Henry VIII actually slayed a priest in a church in that 1 mile area, and where there's a particular area of ground where people sunbathe. And no doubt they've been sunbathing there today. I've got little knowledge of exactly what went on that particular ground they're actually sunbathing on. Fascinating insight to all this kind of occultism, Rothschilds dominated, all the banks are down, the finances down there, all in this 1 mile of England, which is a state in a state. It's not England at all.
What amazes me is the way that they are able to get the public to go along with this. I mean, we look around us today and we say, you know, it's incredible after this Manchester bombing how they've managed to get everyone just to say, oh, well, let's just carry on as we were before. Let's sing Kumbaya. We all have solidarity, but we can't possibly go against the Muslims because we've been told not to. And the Muslims are creating havoc. They're murdering people. They're raping us. We're told we should stay as part of the European Union. Thankfully, we managed to pull out of that. And then I think, well, you know, this must be what happened to get us to get rid of the king. They must have said it's in your best interests to kill the king. You must kill the king, and then it's going to be better for you. And we kill the king, and then what have we got?
It never gets any better.
Ruled by bankers. And it's not just in Britain, is it? This is what you showed. It's all the way across Europe. French Revolution. Killing the king in the French Revolution. Yeah. Bolshevik
Spanish
Revolution.
Spanish Revolution is another one which was pretty killing bad, which I've yet to go into. But again, that was, a replica of the previous revolutions. And this is what I'm trying to show, because what we get really is, Hitler wanted to rule the world. He invaded Poland and he wanted to spread east for more land or whatever. We don't get the build-up of the early 1920th century of what exactly was going on in mainland Europe, because we are an island and America is across the water. It was so easy then to no internet, for people to be led down a line of this great evil monster in Europe. What needs, troops going over to France and to fight, which everyone fell for. But consequently, what this is showing is when people say, oh, the Rothschilds funded him and this and the other, when you watch this documentary, and all this documentary is fact, then you'll know exactly where the Christian side of Europe, whether you want to be a Christian today or not, is beyond, that's nothing to do with it. The point was, at that particular time, Europe was a devout Christian continent, which had been taken over after World War One by the Rothschilds, and their men put in place, was taken back again by Hitler and the fascists, Mussolini and Franco to an extent, obviously had his own problems. But these are people who then eventually went into the Soviet Union with a host of other Christian nations. Now, once you understand that, you actually laugh at the thought of Rothschilds funding him, because this goes beyond just any normal war. This is, a real live or die situation. You don't sit on a fence, Jews are capable of it. I mean, Jews are capable of giving up their whole life and the whole religion and changing the name to go underground and infiltrate like the Jesuits. I mean, it's very similar to a Muslim who'll just blow himself up and expect to get his six virgins or half a dozen virgins, whatever. But in this case, this is a war. Leon de Grelle, these were their acts on the sleeves. These are Catholic and they're Christian, and there's Protestant and Christian, and there's Orthodox Christian have all suffered, and they've gone into the Soviet Union, not because Rothschilds funded them, because they want to take Stalin now.
Well, the falsehoods and the lies failed to work on them, but they certainly worked on us so many times before. We just seem so gullible. I mean, our people seem gullible now. They're speaking out against the so-called haters and saying that the most important thing now is to prevent hate speech against Muslims. And they managed to convince our people it was the right thing to kill King Charles I. They managed to convince the French that it was the right thing to kill their king and emancipate the Jews. I mean, they're very clever at lying to our people. Either that or our people are very gullible, and we listen to the wrong person. I think that's what it is. We listen to the wrong person. We made a choice to listen. Well, Eve made a choice to listen to the serpent, and Adam made a choice to listen to Eve. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, we've listened to the wrong people instead of listening to God.
It goes back that far, you're right.
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah.
Again and again, if you think about it, all the white world was wiped out. All the white empires wiped out. We're the only one left. And we're the voice of reason that is speaking up. We're like John the Baptist, the voice in the wilderness. And that's what nationalists are now. We're a voice in the wilderness, speaking sense to our people. Like the prophets. I think it was Messerschmitt who was saying to me earlier that we are like these prophets that were speaking out to the Israelites of the Old Testament. And the Israelites wouldn't listen. And the prophets were speaking the truth to them.
That's right.
And we're fulfilling a similar role today. We're trying to speak the truth to our gullible people. And that's what our history is, gullible people getting screwed over by the Jews.
Well, put it this way, probably my family suffered more than most with that World War II by the British. But I'm here trying to enlighten that Anglo-Saxon English person of the truth. When he's probably done more damage to me than, but I know it's not really his fault, because he was lied to and he was portrayed, Hitler was portrayed wrongly to him. And he went over there in all good faith thinking that he was on the right side. And so same with the Americans, I mean, at the end of the day, America is, I believe, a Masonic country. And although its population may not be Masonic totally, the leaders definitely are. In fact, probably every single president, including Trump, which is proven to be a huge mistake in my eyes every day, is a Freemason.
Well, we can see just in ourselves that we sometimes make the wrong choices. We're not the best of people, but we try to do our best. If we do wrong, we know we can repent of that and try and do the right thing. And I think we understand that our people are like that, and they're in a cloud of ignorance at the moment. They're believing what the liars are telling them. They're believing what the media tells them. And it's got so bad that we need to have shocks to the system like this Manchester bombing to try and bring us around. It's just thankfully there is an awakening to what is going on, and it's been going on for probably the last 10 years, I would say. And every year we get more people that are awake to what's actually happening. And thankfully, you seem to keep producing these documentaries to help us along the way, Dennis.
Well, I'm so pleased you got a new one. They're a journey for me, because obviously I'm coming from an angle where, you know, like I said early on, that I verbally believe that what the Germans were doing were right, and I've never wavered on that one. I don't care how many people say that they were in the occult, how many people say that they were funded by the Rothschilds or whatever. These are just diversions to stop people from really researching Hitler. But the bottom line, I suppose, is that we don't think like these people. And a prime example of that is the closing part in the French Revolution, when there's a question which for 200 years historians have wondered about, you know, when obviously Louis got 16th got executed, the heir to the throne then was a young 10-year-old boy, and what happened to him? And this shows, in my eyes, just how cruel these people really are, and it emulates exactly what happened to the Germans after World War II, when the Jews went back into Germany, took over the prisons, and anyone more or less got picked up off the street, got thrown in these prisons, and were suffering with torture as much as this young kid did. They found out eventually with DNA tests.
Yeah, this is in your most recent episode too, isn't it? At the end, I hadn't heard of that before. It was a son of Louis the 16th, or this child that was just kept in this dungeon. That shows you how callous these people were. Supposedly fighting for the people, the French Revolution, liberty, equality, fraternity, and yet they were keeping this child in a dungeon, covered in scabies and starving him and torturing him.
In dark, sickening. Yeah, for long stretches, yeah. Eventually he died. The scientists actually had the boys' heart, which had dried up over the years, they'd kept it, and then eventually when the DNA was possible, they checked it with the royal family, and even with the DNA from Marie Antoinette's hair, another person who got beheaded, and it seems that this young lad wasn't, the royalists didn't manage to get him away to safety, but did suffer until cruelty, till eventually died.
It also reminded me of the cruelty to the Tsars' daughters. I mean, that's horrific as
again,
well.
Again, you know, it's just a mirror of it all, isn't it? Same people, different generation.
It seems intent on just wiping out everything that's good. I mean, they are the army of the forces of darkness. This is a battle between good and evil, and no God's side is the white race, and Satan's side is the Jews. And the problem is that the Jews know what side they are on, but our people don't know what side we're on.
Well, that's what they've done with the protocols. Well, I think we talked about that a while back, where they said they would, and they have taken away our God. There's a lot of people today refuse to admit that, you know, Christ or God. Some people say even Christ didn't exist. They've managed to do that, the Jews in Europe, especially in communist EU, which again is covertly communist. A lot of people don't realize it. So everything in the protocols is more or less, I mean, you can more or less assess it's come to pass. It's a sad tragedy that we could well be too late, but, you know, hopefully the more people we awaken, the better chance we have.
Well, with moral relativism that they've pushed upon us, they've even got us not believing in evil anymore. People don't believe in good and evil. They think that that just depends on the circumstances, and nobody's really evil, but that's why people are able to get away with doing these really horrific evil acts, because nobody believes anyone could be that evil.
You know, so this goes right to the education system at the moment, when they're telling children, you know, you can decide whether you want to be a boy or a girl. this transgenderism or whatever it is, you know, this is pure evil, satanic. But people can't see it, and most people can't see it.
Well, I think they don't think that people do evil things just for the sake of doing evil things. It's like these pedophiles. They're trying to say, oh, well, that's just a sexual orientation. No, it's not. It's evil people being evil for the sake of being evil. It's like that film where it says the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world that he didn't exist.
I was just thinking of that line, yeah.
Yeah, because then the devil can get away with doing anything. And it's the same situation we're in now. We've been told that evil doesn't exist. There aren't people out there that want to do you evil. The government would want to do you evil. Well, the government is genociding us. Look at what it's doing, importing all these foreigners in and replacing us with them. You don't get more evil than that. Look at abortion. Look at the millions of babies that are murdered in their wombs by them. Yeah, baby sacrifice. I mean, they dug up all these pots with these babies in that had been sacrificed in Carthage in North Africa 2,000-3,000 years ago, where these Canaanites were in Carthage, and they'd been sacrificing babies. Oh, that's so horrible. That's terrible. Nowhere near the number of babies that are sacrificed in 1 year.
That's right.
Just in Britain alone with abortions.
Yeah. But it's all been wrapped up and covered up in nice Christmas paper.
People don't believe in good and evil anymore, and they don't want to think that the Jews would have anything to do with that. They don't want to think that the Jews would have malign intentions towards us. But they've had malign intentions towards Christians since the very beginning of Christianity. And
day one. And
Christians were white. It was all white up until 100 years ago or so.
Yeah.
Okay, there might have been a few missions to China or to Africa, but predominantly it was all white. And when the Muslims invaded any of these Arabian areas, they just wiped out the church there. So there was no whites left, and then they interbred with the ones that were there.
Well, I saw a post the other day of four Germans apparently having a beer. You know, I had the beer festival over there with the big massive pots, and all four were black.
And these were supposed to be Germans.
Underneath it said, yeah, four Germans enjoying themselves in Bavaria somewhere.
Well, it's like when they say a British man has just blown himself up.
Yeah, same thing, isn't it? Same thing.
Yeah, trying to tell us that white is black and that 4 and 4 = 5. And it will, like it was the child that pointed out that the emperor was wearing no clothes. It's the youth that are going to be pointing this out. It's the youth that are going to be taking to the streets. That's where you see the real movement towards nationalism and the alt-right. It's the young people that have had it to the back teeth of all the cultural Marxism being forced on them in the schools, realizing that it's all a pack of lies. That they're being
and there is an agenda behind it. You know, you've got to remember that all these Masons, although some may not know the lower rank ones, but certainly the ones in the know are there for a reason. I mean, you know, at some stage, you know, I'll probably be going back into Hollywood again. You've got people like Clooney and Brad Pitt and all these kind of people, you know, Morgan Freeman. You know, these people all know the agenda. That's why they're given great rewards and a longevity of a career. You know, because they go along with it. I mean, they think they're safe, but I mean, if you read the Talmud clearly, they're not clearly safe. But apparently, you know, while they're earning these millions and being mega celebrities, they're quite happy to go along with it. And that, to me, is one of the biggest crimes ever, because, you know, that is selling out your own people.
Well, I just thinking then, what we used to have instead of Hollywood, instead of the movies, we used to have morality plays. We used to have mummers plays. If ever we saw anyone that was dressing up and that was acting, it would be something with a moral to it, like St. George rescuing the white damsel from the Turk. That was a very popular one. They were instilling good morals in our people, not like today.
You've just reminded me actually of a trailer that I saw the other day where this guy stalks, it's obviously Hollywood and he's Jewish, stalks a white waitress. You know, and eventually has her back at his house in a cage. You know, how sick can one get? But now this is mainstream viewing, you know.
Well, this is what happens when you allow the people that killed Christ to run your entertainment industry. They are such expert liars. I mean, Christ told us that the Father was the master of lies. And look at what they've managed to do. Somehow they managed to lie to us, to let them take over our entertainment industry. And look how much they've degenerated our people. Somehow they managed to lie to us and get us to give them the control of the banking industry. And look what they've done with it. I mean, it can only be that they are good liars, because they certainly didn't tell us the truth to get to where they are today, did they?
Well, yeah. But it goes back to this fanatical vision of theirs, where they're quite willing to actually, for instance, the Catholic Church at the moment, there'll be a number of Jews in there who've given up their life and changed their name and studied to be Catholics and to get into that position where, you know, they've infiltrated and, you know, they know this agenda is not going to happen in their lifetime. You know, it's probably going to be another couple of generations before you get, you know, to the end result. And yet they're willing to give up this, I mean, to change your name and to change your religion and go through everything what's required to get to that point where you can infiltrate Christianity. It's fanaticism. You can't label it any other way.
Well, their history of doing this, as you say, it gets passed down generation to generation. They've had this plan outlined in the Talmud, telling them how they've got to behave, you know, as a criminal gang when they're embedded in these nations that they live among, exactly how to take the country over. And this is passed down father to son. They all know about it. They all work together as a unit. And we don't have anything. We don't have anything telling us that there's this generational plan to infiltrate our countries and take us over. And when we're told this, we don't believe this, even though it's outlined in the Bible. It's outlined what these people are like, what they did to Christ. So we were warned, and yet we've fallen for their lies and turned a blind eye to everything that they're doing. And it's now got so bad that if we point out what they're doing, they can have us sent to prison.
Well, that's why when they move into these countries, first thing on the agenda is to buy up the media. And because once they control that media, then the message then is theirs, what is going out every day, and they hide the real message and the real truth. And so it gets to a point then that people are sucked in so much and they listen to so much of this, that and the other, that when somebody like ourselves comes along and says, whoa, you know, this isn't right, we're the ones who are the conspiracy theorists. It's amazing how they've done it.
Well, this is the beauty of the internet, thankfully. We've now got a voice and we can counteract the lies that they put out there, and we can expose that this has been going on for centuries against us and try and wake our people up, because this is the history that they should be taught in schools, not the lies. They should be told the truth about what happened during the war, truth about the Illuminati, truth about the Masons, the Jews. Professor E. Michael Jones, History of the World and Revolutions and the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. That's the sort of stuff that should be taught in schools. Well, it isn't. We can discuss it here and we can put it out there for people to check out anyway. That's all we can do. Dennis, do you want to let people know where they can find your work before we finish for today?
Yeah, well, this particular episode, I'm hoping to fine-tune. It should be up sometime over the weekend. The previous documentaries, I mean, again, The Greatest Story Never Told, at one point was the 36th best of all time voted on IMDb, which is wonderful. And Communism by the Back Door is a documentary, in my eyes, just as important, which fills in the dots and the cracks after World War II to present day. So, and you can find that on its website, Communism by the Back Door and The Greatest Story Never Told.tv.
Make sure you check both of those out if you haven't already. Dennis, thank you very much for coming on today.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday, same time, same place, at Radio Aryan. We hope you all have a wonderful weekend ahead of you.
tuned into Radio Aryan.